السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين، حبيب إله العالمين أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المنتجبين. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. وإذ قال إبراهيم رب اجعل هذا البلد آمنا واجنبني وبني أن نعبد الأصنام رب إنهن أضللن كثيرا من الناس فمن تبعني فإنه مني ومن عصاني فإنك غفور رحيم. صدق الله العلي العظيم، وصلوا على محمد وآل محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Today is the 13th of the month of Dhul Hijjah, and we are slowly approaching the beginning of the Islamic New Year. This is the final month in the calendar. And the first month of the Islamic New Year is the month of Muharram. We are at the doorsteps of the month of Muharram, in which we recognize and commemorate the great sacrifice of Imam Hussein bin Ali alayhi salam and his family members and his companions. And we commemorate what he gave in order to protect the nation of his grandfather. But it is in these days that we are also celebrating another sacrifice, and that is that of the Prophet Ibrahim. And we do that with the day of Eid al-Adha, which was on Monday, the 10th of Dhul Hijjah, the day of Eid. And with that, I want to mention a little bit about Ibrahim and the character of Ibrahim, as we usually do during the days of Hajj. And these mark the final days of Hajj. The pilgrims are now finishing up their rites for Hajj. These are the final days. And all will be returning back home. Ibrahim, ala nabina wa ala alihi afdalu salatu wa salam, when we mention Ibrahim, we send blessings upon him and upon his family. And we are taught in the hadith to send blessings upon the Prophet Muhammad and his family in the same way that we send blessings upon the Prophet Ibrahim and his family. Allahumma salli wa sallim ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad kama sallaita ala Ibrahim wa ala Ibrahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Both prophets had blessed families, and they had a blessed progeny. And Ibrahim, as we know him, is the father of the three what became known as the Abrahamic faiths: Islam, Christianity, and Judaism. Meaning that it was from his progeny, his direct progeny, from Ismail and Ishaq, his two sons, that from those two progenies, from those two lines of succession, came the prophets of Banu Israel from one side, from Ishaq, and then other prophets, among them the Prophet Muhammad, from the descendants of Ismail. And there are other prophets that are mentioned as well that are descendants of Ismail. And Ibrahim is mentioned in a number of places in the Quran. Ibrahim has his own chapter in the Quran. Chapter number 14 is named Surah Ibrahim. And chapter number 14 does not begin to speak of Ibrahim until about verse number 35, which is towards the end of the chapter. And it begins with the following: It begins with the verses, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ اجْعَلْ هَذَا الْبَلَدَ آمِنًا وَاجْنُبْنِي وَبَنِيَ أَنْ نَعْبُدَ الْأَصْنَامِ. And basically in this chapter, God is speaking about the prayers and the supplications of Abraham. Not much is told about the rites of the Hajj or what Ibrahim did as far as when he built the house of God and when he sacrificed his son and when he faced resistance, when he saw roadblocks in the way, and when he had to take his wife into a barren land. These stories are all mentioned in different chapters. So Surah As-Saffat, chapter 37, speaks about one portion of his story. Surah Al-Baqarah, chapter number 2, also speaks about one portion of his story. And Ibrahim, as we all know, he was not a native of the land of Mecca. And he had to leave his own people and struggle against his own people who were idol worshippers in order to deliver the mission that God had commissioned him with. And so when he left, he went to Syria. When he left what is present day Iraq, where he was born, he went to the Levant, the Syrian area, and it is from there that he departed after Hajar gave birth to Ismail. Because as commentators tell us that Sarah, his wife, did not want to see Hajar, who was taken as a bondsmaid, give birth and become a mother and give birth to Ibrahim's child before she did. And eventually she would have the son, Ishaq. But at that moment, she did not want to see Hajar and the newborn Ismail. And the book of Genesis mentions both Ismail and Ishaq and their progenies as well. But he leaves and he goes to the land of Mecca, which is foreign to him, which is foreign to the family. And Ibrahim is going out here on complete faith, total faith. The fact that he had to leave his land, I mean, imagine leaving the bubble of Orange County, for instance, and having to travel to Death Valley or somewhere uninhabited, somewhere totally unknown, the South Pole or something. And now God wants him to build something. He wants him to live there. He wants him to build something. And then he wants him to stand on a mountain and call people to circulate around this new house that he's built. And God tells him, people are going to respond to your call, even if you're the only person there. And then on top of all of that, small little detail, you have to sacrifice your son too, in the middle of all of that. The son that you brought with you, the one that you had waited so long, because Abraham had reached a very old age, his wife as well. And that's why they had lost hope. Because the numbers were against them. Statistically, they could not have children. So when they looked at it from a, you know, from a physical, outside sort of point of view, the numbers were against them. But with faith in God and with faith that God would deliver on his promise of a progeny, they were able to conceive. And so sometimes the faith that we have inside is much stronger than, well, whatever statistics is. Statistics say you're not going to make it. Statistics say that you can't have a child. Statistics say that, you're never going to be wealthy. Statistics say this and that. But faith sometimes defeats numbers. Faith that we have defeats statistics. And this was very true in the case of Abraham, in the case of Ibrahim. And so he took his bondsmaid, or his wife at that time, Hajar, and with their newborn son Ismail. And God asked him through a dream that he had to sacrifice his son. And he has to sacrifice him with his own two hands. And commentators say that in the dream that he saw, it wasn't that he saw himself sacrificing his son, but he received a command to sacrifice his son. And so because he received a command, he knew that it was real. And he saw the command three times. First time, second time, third time. After the third time, he approached his son and he told him of the command, and his son was a willing participant. فَلَمَّا أَسْلَمَ وَتَلَّهُ لِلْجَبِينَ. And this is in Surah As-Saffat, chapter 37. The story begins at verse 102. فَلَمَّا بَلَغَ مَعَهُ السَّعْيَ. When Ismail came to an age where he could partake in his father's affairs. So once he was at that age, and some commentators say around 13 years old, when he was, you know, just at the cusp of adolescence, where he was old enough to understand what was to happen. The Quran says at that point, we said to Ibrahim, this is the command that we showed him. We showed him the command, and the Quran says, فَلَمَّا أَسْلَمَ. أَسْلَمَ, أَسْلَم means to submit completely, to become submissive. أَسْلَمَ is a verb for two people. So both of them submitted completely. It wasn't that Ibrahim did not want to do it, but his son wanted to do it, or the opposite way around. Both of them were willing. They were completely willing. Internally, they had accepted God's command, even though at that point, they probably could not see the wisdom behind it. And maybe the father could, but the son could not at that age. فَلَمَّا أَسْلَمَ وَتَلَّهُ لِلْجَبِينَ. When they completely submitted, that's when we called upon them. Now, some of the details, of course, we know are left out in the Qur'an. The Qur'an doesn't always speak of details. It's very concise. 114 chapters, has to be extremely concise. But a lot of the details that we have come from commentaries, which are derived from hadith, sayings of the Prophet and the family, the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salam. And he stood there with his son. And his son requested that he binded his hands, his arms, and that he cover his face with a cloth so that he doesn't have to see his son's expression. And Ibrahim stands there with full faith, and he places the knife on the neck of his son. And if you visualize it, how hard this must have been on the heart of Ibrahim. That after many, many years, God finally gives him a son, and he tells him that you have a progeny that's gonna rise from this son. And then all of a sudden he says, I want you to kill him with your own hands. So Ibrahim must have felt extremely conflicted on the inside, but he still had faith. He knew that God was going to deliver his promise. And he began to move the knife on the neck of his son. And the knife turned to the dull side where it could not hurt him. And Ibrahim attempted again. And again it flipped to the dull side. And imagine he's actually moving his hand, but nothing is happening. Even the strength, you know, sometimes they were showing something on video. They had blindfolded, it was an experiment that they were doing, a humorous experiment that they were doing, but they had blindfolded someone, and they had put in front of him those glass, what do they call them, the things that they keep the reptiles in. Snakes and cobras and whatever. And they told him that as a test of your bravery, your courage, you're blindfolded, but you have to place your hand inside and you have to touch whatever is there. It's a cobra or a snake or whatever. What they really put there was a teddy bear. It wasn't going to hurt him. But he, you know, he thought that what he was doing was very brave and courageous, and it really was. Because it doesn't matter what the reality was, it mattered what he thought was happening. What he thought, and the way that his attitude, and the way that he approached it. And he placed his hand inside, and he feels a weird texture, and he starts shouting, he starts jumping. Just because he felt the texture of it, and he thought that it was similar to the texture of an animal. So imagine Ibrahim is standing there, and he's actually, he doesn't know that the knife is going to turn. But he's still moving the knife. And it keeps turning to the blunt side, and he gets frustrated. And the reports, there are different reports, but most of the reports say that he threw the knife, thinking that it was a bad knife. He threw the knife, and it struck a rock, and the rock split in half. So to him, a knife that can split a rock open, it can't cut through skin and flesh, which is very easy to cut through. So he was feeling extremely conflicted at this moment. After all of it, after everything that God asks me to do, and after carrying out, now it actually isn't taking place, it's not happening. And so he hears a voice calling out to him that, Ya Ibrahim, qad saddaqta ru'ya. We called upon him, O Ibrahim, that you have followed through with the command that we gave you. So, you know, this tells us something about the spirit of Ibrahim, is that he was willing to sacrifice. He was willing to give. And he knew that there was going to be something which was going to follow. He knew that God would deliver on his promise. And so he acted out of faith. And Ibrahim was willing to give the most dearest thing to him. Because he knew that the recompense was what? The satisfaction of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Even though he could not see it at that moment, he could not see the compensation, he could not see the reward. And again, we are only a few days shy of the month of Muharram, and we commemorate Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And Imam Hussein was the one who established the slogan of "My Lord, take until you are satisfied." فَخُذْ حَتَّى تَرْضَى إِنْ كَانَ هَذَا يُرْضِيكَ فَخُذْ حَتَّى تَرْضَى. If this is what satisfies you, if this is what fulfills the requirement, then take until you are satisfied. Keep taking. And Ibrahim was challenged with giving one son, and Imam Hussein gave. It wasn't like a play where, you know, the curtains come out and everything. It actually happened in front of him. So realize, when the Quran is talking about a great sacrifice in the case of Ibrahim, realize the magnitude of the sacrifice of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, where he actually had to give something. And this is where God tests us. God tests us with giving. And many people are simply not willing to give. And I want to share something with you that I was reading recently. There was a psychologist who was conducting a class on managing fear. And she said to her students, she posed the following question one day at the beginning. She said, "Do you consider yourself a giving person?" This is what she asked them, to her students. And most of her students were married. They had spouses. And so, of course, when you're married, you're a giver. You're giving everything. You give your life away, and you give your time away. And sometimes spouses make it very, very known to each other that I gave up my future to be with you, and I gave up my hobbies, and I gave up this to be with you. I gave up everything. So, of course, they all considered themselves to be givers, more than takers. They considered themselves to be givers. Now, they say there was a husband and wife one time, and the husband was complaining to the wife. He was telling her that, you know, all I hear from you is give, give, give. You never say take. You're always expecting me to give, 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 give. I've never heard the word take, not even once from you. he was saying this to her, so she picked up a pair of shoes, her shoes, and she said, take, go take this to the repairman, let them repair. You want to hear, take here, take this. So they said, of course, we're all givers. You know, we go to work, provide the paycheck, that's giving my time for my family. I cook and I clean and I wash the clothes. I'm giving time for my, I'm constantly giving for my family, my kids, my parents, so on and so forth. So she said, and she put them to the test. She said, then I want you all to do homework. I want you to go home. And since you're all givers, I want you to give thanks. Go home to your spouse and say thank you. Don't give them anything materially. Nothing material, just say thank you. Give that. Give thanks. Because thanks requires giving to say thank you. And she gave them the homework and they came back the next day. Many of them had, and they told the truth, many of them had found it very, very reluctant, had found themselves very, very reluctant to even say thank you. Extremely reluctant. And so what this professor was saying is that it's amazing how we consider ourselves givers, but we're not willing to give the smallest things. Like thanks. Sometimes it's so hard for us to say thank you to a person. And she talks about giving love, and giving thanks, and giving energy, and giving time, and giving money. These are all things that we give. And by the way, if you look at the Quran holds in very high esteem and honors people who give and people who produce. And the people who are constantly taking, the people who are constantly receiving, or on the receiving end, they're not shown in a good light in the Quran. The producers and the givers are the ones who are praised. And so she says the following. She says, it's something very, very psychological when we give. She says, it takes two things to be able to give. Number one, you have to mature into an adult to be able to give. And number two, many people have not mastered the art of giving. Giving is an art. Now, you might be thinking that I am a mature adult. She says the following. This is very interesting. She says when we're born, when we're babies, you know, our first few days and our first few weeks and our first few months, our survival depends on receiving. It doesn't depend on giving. If I don't receive, I'm going to die. If I don't receive the milk from my mother, if I don't receive the sustenance, if I don't receive the warmth, if I don't receive the care and the protection, I can't do any of that for myself. As a child can't, you know, change its own diapers or whatever. It receives. Constantly, a child is receiving. A child is not giving. A baby is not giving. And she says that as we grow older, we learn to, on the surface, we learn to take care of ourselves. So we learn to change our own clothes. We learn to, you know, take a shower by ourselves. We learn to cook for ourselves. We learn to drive for ourselves. We learn to make money for ourselves. But subconsciously on the inside, we are still takers. We are not givers. And some people simply do not grow out of that outside child that they have. And this requires training. And this requires maturity. And she says that only when you are completely mature, you can give without expectation. Because even as husbands and wives and sons and children, we give, but it's not always out of no expectation of return. Because if a man and a woman who have been happily married for 10 years or 15 years, and they're fulfilling their rights, he's getting the paycheck, she's cooking and cleaning. Of course, we can't use those examples, but we'll say one of them is doing something and the other is doing another role. And they're in agreement. So it could be the opposite way around. And they're like that for 10 years, for 15 years, consistently they're providing for one another. What happens if one of them says, for a year, I'm not going to bring home a paycheck? Or for a year, I'm not going to cook or clean or take care of the household. Or for a year, I'm not going to take care of the children in any way, shape, or form. I'm not going to contribute. What happens? Do they still give without expectation of receiving? Most likely not. Because when we give, and this happens for all of us, we're always expecting to receive. It takes a very, very high level of consciousness and maturity to give without expecting return. And that's what we're learning from the story of Ibrahim. Ibrahim didn't know that God was going to replace this sacrifice with a ram. Ibrahim had no idea what was going to happen. Ibrahim didn't know the future, unless God wanted him to know the future. There were things that God told him that were going to happen, but he couldn't see it. So he had full faith, and he had full maturity, knowing that even if I give up my son, who I've waited so many years, God is going to replace him. Somehow God is going to replace him. Something is going to be replaced. And, you know, we have two different types of people. There are two mentalities which exist out there. And many people, they hold back from giving. Either it could be giving money, it could be giving time, it could be giving energy, it could be giving love, it could be giving thanks. And by the way, in giving thanks, one very famous hadith says, "Man lam yashkur al-makhluq, lam yashkur al-khaliq." He who does not give thanks to the creature, the creation, meaning us, we're the creatures, we're the creation, has not fully thanked the Creator. And that's another portion of giving. Sometimes we can give money. Some people, they have the will to give money and energy and time, but they can't give thanks. There's something that just holds them within from giving thanks, as if something is going to be taken away. And really, there are two mentalities. There's one mentality called, there's an abundance mentality and there's a scarcity mentality. Some people live their lives as if there's a scarcity in the world. Scarcity means there's not enough. So if I give money, there's not enough money in the world. I'm not going to get it back. If I give food, there's not enough food to go around. I can't get it back. Other people have an abundance mentality. So they will willingly share their time. They will willingly share their energy. They will willingly share information that they have. You know, in this world that we live in, information is very, very valuable. So if two businesses, for instance, are set up one on each side of the road, if one of them is very, very successful and the other is not so successful, the successful one has not only resources, but has information that the unsuccessful one doesn't have. And that's why he's so successful. Because knowledge, when it is applied, information, when it is applied, is also power. So, because of the world that we live in today, some people approach it with scarcity, that if I give this information away, then it's going to be competition to me. If I give love away freely, if I give thanks away freely, if I give money away freely, if I give time and energy away freely, people who operate on a scarcity mentality that there's not enough in the world, they're never able to truly give. But people who act out of an abundance mentality, I know that in this world, there's everything. There's an abundance of blessings. That if I give my blessings, I will also receive blessings. It's not that those blessings will, that's it, they've diminished and they only existed at a certain point of time and it can never be brought back. And so, Ibrahim, and this is the message that I leave with, Ibrahim teaches us to give. He teaches us to give unconditionally. And he was willing to sacrifice everything that he had, his livelihood and his family, and even his own son. And when God only saw the willingness, see, Ibrahim didn't have to give up. In the end, he didn't have to give up his son. What he displayed was a willingness. And that's why we talk about the importance of intention, because intention is an indicator of willingness. When we say that, إِنَّمَا الْأَعْمَالُ بِالنِّيَّاتِ, that our deeds are measured by our intention. Because intention is the best indicator of willingness. And it's the willingness, it's not the act itself. Eventually, he didn't have to slaughter his son. He slaughtered a ram, and he had a feast. He didn't have, but he had a willingness. The fact that he was willing to put the knife to the neck of his dear child, that was his willingness. So we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to grant us strength to grant us willingness, to grant us the ability to overcome our fears, and to grant us the ability to give unconditionally without the sake of return. We ask, there are two announcements. One is that on Saturday, not this Saturday, but the Saturday that's coming, the 24th, we will be celebrating Eid al-Ghadir here at the IECOC, and the program will begin with Maghrib and Isha prayers, inshallah. And we have celebrations and different programs and presentations from the youth. So please bring yourselves and encourage your family members and your friends and your loved ones to come with you, inshallah. And also on Tuesday is Dua Tawassul, which begins with Maghrib and Isha prayers. Also tomorrow, Friday, Salat al-Jum'ah begins at 1. If you know anybody who is coming from the area, please notify them of the construction that most of you have already seen. But if you know anybody new who is coming, please notify them of the construction. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma ghfir al-mu'minina wal-mu'minat wal-muslimina wal-muslimat al-ahya'i minhum wal-amwat. تابع بيننا وبينهم بالخيرات إنك مجيب الدعوات إنك قاضي الحاجات إنك على كل شيء قدير برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين وصلى الله وسلم على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين